12th, 8 a.m. for the Cultural Diversity Committee to be now open. I guess we start off with roll call.
Yes, we do.
Chair Perkins?
Yeah, here.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Carter? Regent Levine? I see her. Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Moran? You have a quorum.
Thank you. With that, I guess, let's see. I'd like to, before we have take a minute to honor the previous chair of this committee, Regent Sam Lieberman, I'd like to give Amy Carvalho a second to for some kind words.
Thank you, Chair Perkins. I just wanted to say that Regent Lieberman was passionate about the work of the Cultural Diversity Committee, and I would encourage us all to continue with that passion. Also, we can be change agents for diversity, and this committee has a unique opportunity to make lasting policy and relational changes on our campuses. So I'd like to say that we will continue the work, the very important work that we do, with a renewed passion and interest in making sure that all students on our campuses are heard and seen. So thank you, Chair Perkins.
And thank you. And with that, a couple minutes of silence. Moving on to item number two, the minutes. If I could take a motion, please, to accept those minutes.
So move.
Second.
Regent McAdoo.
Do I have a second?
Regent Carter, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? That motion carries. Item number three, remarks from the chair. Since Amy so eloquently said those great sentiments about Sam, the only thing I'd like to add is that Tom said we actually have action items today. I'm sorry, Chancellor Riley told me to mention that we actually have items today that we can actually vote on, because it's been a while since this committee has had anything that had that wasn't informational only. And he said, make sure I reiterate that over and over again, because today we're going to get something done. Moving right along. Item number four, handbook revisions. Yeah. Z, right? That's on you, handbook revisions?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair Perkins. Good morning, members of the Cultural Diversity Committee. Good morning, presidents. Good morning, faculty and student leaders, and anybody else who's listening or watching right now. As you can see from the briefing paper, this agenda item seeks to propose revisions to NC's non-discrimination policy, particularly the one that's located in Title IV, Chapter 8, Section 13 of the handbook, which is the board's policy against discrimination. Well, these revisions seek to expand that non-discrimination policy to include discrimination against hair texture, hairstyle, and headwear that folks may wear that is associated with race, religion, or other traits of their culture. These revisions are consistent with federal law, particularly the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits, as we all know, discrimination on the basis of race, color, sex, etc., in public accommodations as well as in the context of education. And so not only are these revisions consistent with that, but they're also consistent with a resolution from the Associated Students of the University of Nevada, which was passed late last year, and it reflected a lot of movement going on around the country, particularly led in California, where legislatures were passing laws in this area. So it wasn't only California, it's been California, it's been Illinois, New York, Kentucky, etc. This is important because, you know, for years, women of color, men and women of color, but particularly the women, have felt pressure. There have been reports for decades about pressure they have felt to conform to European styles of hair, straight hair. And folks in my family are no different. And those European standards of beauty relate back through our history. I mean, there were times, particularly after the Civil War, where young black kids were portrayed as pickaninnies with their unkempt hair, partially clad, and not worthy of a role in society. And that hair was worn naturally. And so those standards of beauty, I think, have lasted, and they have served to provide grounds for discrimination against African Americans in particular. So that's kind of the history of it. I would just add one more point, which is the natural hair texture of African Americans is not only their right to wear it, but has a connection to protest and self-identity and freedom in the African-American cultural history in this country. And in this moment of socio-political change, transformative moment in this country, I think it would be a good signal to show that we are explicitly protecting such hairstyles, particularly, you know, dreadlocks, braids, twists, and afros, which have been part of the African-American cultural movement for freedom in this country for years. So with that, I would ask the board, this Cultural Diversity Committee, to pass these revisions, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is there any discussion?
I do. This is Regent McAdoo.
Go ahead, Regent McAdoo.
Thank you. I fully support this revision. I believe that I read the argument on it for not doing it because, quote, we haven't had many complaints. I want to say, so what? We don't need to have complaints in order to approve that. So I'm speaking out on behalf of it. I believe it allows us as NSHE to have solidarity in supporting supporting, I want to say, our neighbors and friends, regardless of their hairstyle, regardless of their skin color. So I will be supporting this fully. Thank you.
Was that a motion?
Yes, I would love to make that a motion. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do I have a second? Thank you. Any more discussion? Any more questions?
Chair Perkins?
Yes.
This is Regent Geddes. I'd like to make a comment briefly.
Okay.
And it's really to the board and all of the students out there. This board is willing to act on initiatives that the students bring forward. As Mr. Bagali said there in the beginning, this came out of a resolution of the student government at UNR. and they forwarded it up to us and asked us to make changes. And staff worked on it and crafted a policy for consideration by this committee today. And when this committee acts, we will be improving the system for everybody. So as we're all having these discussions on our campuses, I would encourage all the students out there to bring forward the policy changes you think we need to make so that we can consider them. Thank you.
Thank you for that additional comment. And with that, if there are no more comments, I would like to call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Moving right along to item number 5.
I believe that's me again, Chair Perkins. And again, I didn't say this last time. For the record, Zalalem Bogala, Deputy General Counsel for System Administration at NCHI. This revision here involves the ICT policy, the information communications and the information communication technology policy for accessibility at NCHI. And so if you recall, we brought this to the board or to this committee back in December and basically provided a full presentation about why we're doing this and what the changes entail. We're bringing it back now for possible action because last time it was information only. So nothing has changed. The only thing that has changed is that we have run all of these revisions by a work group comprised of representatives from all of the institutions to provide feedback and to approve of these changes. And so with that, I would ask you all to pass these revisions, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, I'd like to entertain a motion.
So moved.
I'll second.
That was Regent Carter made the motion and seconded by Regent Levine.
It was McAdoo. Oh,
McAdoo.
I'm sorry, Regent McAdoo. Sorry, it's hard when I can't see you all.
It was Carvalho.
Oh, okay. Okay, guys, no playing tricks. This is my first meeting here. Okay. Who made the second? Regent Carvalho?
Yes.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. And with that, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Any opposed?
And that motion carries. Let's see. Item number 5, Edict Retreat.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Edith Fernandez, Vice President at Nevada State College and outgoing Chair of Edict. Chancellor Regents, thank you for the opportunity to provide you an update from the Edict Retreat. As you know, Edict plays a unique role in the NCHI system in that we work directly with the Chancellor and Regents to recommend, review, evaluate equity, diversity, and inclusion goals, policies, and practices statewide. Edict's greatest strength is that we encourage regular collaboration between institutions, the HSI Task Force, the All Access Committee, and the hugely successful diversity summits are but 3 outstanding examples. This work comes together because Edict officers hold each other to the highest standards of accountability and challenge each other simply to do better. Each year at the Edict Retreat, we come together to identify the most pressing issues to tackle, and we co-create proactive strategies to address these inequities. At the retreat, which took place prior to the COVID outbreak, we dove deep into a few issues, including free speech, crisis management during First Amendment disputes, racism in the classroom, recognizing and rooting out bias in the hiring selection process, as well as setting equity, diversity, and inclusion standards for the chancellor and presidential searches. As chair, I close the retreat with a challenge to my fellow EDIC officers to move away from transactional changes and move forward with transformational changes. One thing I have learned in my role as EDIC chair is to embrace the discomfort of challenging conversations, embrace the uneasiness of difficult dialogues, and embrace the apprehension I myself have felt in being the one that says what everyone else is thinking but too afraid to say. It is when we break through that uneasiness that we are most open to learning and we are able to transcend our own limitations. So I leave you with this. Until we recognize the harm we have collectively done to Black people in holding back and shutting down and in oppressing Black lives through the very use of our own institutional structures, no new policy, no new initiative, no new program will ever right the wrongs. I yield to my colleague, Yvonne Allen, who will speak specifically to an outcome of our retreat. Yvonne?
Thank you, Edith. For the record, Yvonne Allen, Program Director of Equity, Inclusion, and Sustainability at TMCC, and a past chair of EDIC. Good morning, Regents and Chancellor Riley. Hope you're all doing well. In your agenda, you'll find a document titled Strengthening the Focus on Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in the Upcoming Chancellor and Presidential Searches. Earlier this year, as Edith noted, as one of our action steps resulting from the EDIC annual retreat, we prepared this letter to be sent to the Regent Chancellor Search Committee members and the Board of Regents, whose spirit, intent, and concerns are magnified in the current pandemic crisis, where underrepresented groups are being impacted on multiple levels, including racial health disparities, in COVID-19 impacts and in death tolls, access to healthcare, and furloughs resulting in the impacts to the whole family unit. Now, these concerns are further magnified by nationwide protests, civil unrest, and movements that will not be silenced. Black Lives Matter. Given the centrality of the figure of the chancellor, as well as the two soon-to-be vacant presidential roles, now more than ever, we require candidates with a proven track record of success in advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, not simply an intellectual or abstract level of understanding needs. Now more than ever, we need a visionary, as well as a sound and proven practitioners of diversity, equity, and inclusion to continue advancing our public education mandates as inscribed in all of our institutional missions. We encourage the sharing of our message, and please use the proposed questions in your attachment. These are the characteristics that new leadership should exemplify. Thank you for this time. Thank you, Chancellor Riley, for your leadership. You will be missed. This new chancellor will definitely have some big shoes to fill. Now, Edith and I will take any questions that y'all may have. Thank you.
Thank you for that report. Are there any questions?
Regent Perkins, can I ask a question? This is Lisa Levine.
Sure, Regent Levine, go ahead.
To either of the presenters, did they have this group, do they have anything that could help us with a cultural competency evaluation? That's something that this committee was tasked with yesterday morning, either by the chancellor or Chair Geddes. Do they have anything like that or any pamphlets that y'all may have picked up that could be beneficial? I would imagine so.
I'll add that this is a great example of how we do work closely with the Regents. So as a collective group, we could easily share a list of instruments, even national experts out there that we ourselves consult. So that is something that I am sure that new incoming edict chairs would gladly take on. And we invite you to one of our edict meetings so we can better understand what the needs are and see how we can more easily provide some resources. Yvonne?
I agree with that. And also, I do think that this group of diversity officers, we are all very, very proud of everything that our institutions do. ENSHE as a whole is wonderful in how our diversity officers collaborate. I would encourage the CDC to perhaps create a template of exactly what information you would like from us so that we can compare the same information across each institution.
Did that answer your question, Regent Levine?
It did. Thank you. And I would love to participate in one of those meetings if it's possible and there's an upcoming one. So thank you very much.
I'm going to say you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to bring that up in a new business about the cultural competencies, but great minds think alike. Thank you so much.
And with our retreat also, sorry, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
With our retreat also, I'd like to thank Regent Amy Carvalho for participating all day with us in that retreat. She's a member of this committee. And so not only are regents invited to our CD, our edict meeting, we encourage you to, if you would like, attend our retreat as well. Thank you.
So our next meeting is set for June 24th. We'll make sure invitations are set out. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. And that brings us to item number 7, equity efforts during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Oakes.
Good morning. This is Dr. Eloisa Gordon. I'll go first. I'm sorry. For the record, this is Eloisa Gordon Mora. I'm University Diversity and Inclusion Officer at the University of Nevada, Reno, co-chair of EDIC and upcoming chair of EDIC. I wanted to thank Chancellor Riley, the Board of Regents, Chair Regent Geddes, the Cultural Diversity Committee, and Chair Regent Perkins, as well as Vice Chair Regent Carvalho, for the opportunity to address you this morning, both of us, Dr. Barbie Oakes and I, as members of EDIC, as well as in anticipation of our coming roles as co-chairs. I send absolute gratitude to all my magnificent EDIC colleagues for the outstanding and consistent work they have been carried out, as well as to the outstanding leadership demonstrated by my dear colleague, Dr. Edith Fernandez. This morning, we wanted to go over some of the concerns, strategies, and actions ENSHE institutions can implement going forward to ensure greater equity for people of color and underrepresented groups during and as a result of the pandemic. As we have repeatedly stressed, the pandemic has clearly exposed as well as exacerbated the deep racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic divides of our country. Consequently, we will fail in our dedicated recovery efforts if we do not also develop differentiated working plans that demonstrate a clear understanding of the disparity of impacts being suffered by low-income groups, particularly communities of color, rural populations, women, immigrant groups, and so forth. Even something as apparently basic as wearing a mask for health reasons cannot be viewed as having equal implications for everybody. Mandates to wear face masks are a challenge for people with hearing disabilities. In addition, the use of face masks may create real discomforts for our Black, Brown students, faculty, staff, who fear the impacts of racial stereotyping. If there was any doubt of the profound historical sources of those fears, after May 25th, once again, we're experiencing the intense pain that is the direct consequence of structural racism, marginalization, and socioeconomic injustice. I'm extremely proud of my institution, President Johnson, and the university leadership for having taken an unequivocal stand in its Black Lives Matter platform sent on Wednesday, and this being the direct result of conversations and agreements with the student leadership. This is the type of dialogue and collaboration that has to be more strategically structured between students, faculty, staff, and higher administration, but not simply moments of intense tensions, but as an evolving practice, something that we know doesn't happen by itself. Further, as a result of its insidious pervasiveness, structural racism does not simply impact law enforcement concerns, but housing, education, employment, access to justice and protection. In other words, the exact foundation of a fair and viable democratic society. Supporting and strengthening that foundation, as we know, is what underlines our public education mandate. Consequently, we have to assess how we are addressing those extensive disparities, particularly after COVID-19. Before this meeting, we share a summary of what we know so far on those increasing disparity. We do not have time to review those, but would like to point out a few by way of an example. Nationally, African-American deaths from COVID-19 are nearly two times greater than their share of the population. In Nevada, Latinos make up the greatest share of confirmed cases with respect to their share of the population, almost three times that percentage. Staying at home or working from home is a luxury for many populations, particularly for Latinos and African American, and overall poor sectors, given their concentration on low-wage hourly employment. Forced isolation and increasing financial stress have also increased the exposure of vulnerable populations that experience abuse. Domestic violence, child abuse, LGBTQ+ populations that are rejected at home. Their particular COVID-19 connected xenophobic impacts that we know about, particularly targeting Asian and Pacific Islander communities, as well as immigrant sectors. We could continue developing these examples, but due to time limitations, we want to focus on three basic themes: student enrollment, retention and well-being, faculty and staff return and well-being, and institutional viability. Taking random examples and considering students, ENCHI has demonstrated a superb and brave stand in supporting our DACA and undocumented students. But 42% of the K-12 student pipeline in Nevada comes from Latino communities, the largest groups. So we need to add to our efforts of how are we attracting and supporting these students after COVID-19, knowing of their health challenges, income losses, family fears, and so forth. In terms of faculty and staff, how are we preparing them to work with increasing distresses that Black, Brown, poor students will manifest when they come back to our institution? Further, on what are we focusing in terms of well-being, when we know, for example, that women have carried a particular weight during these times, financial, emotional, in terms of caregiving? Lastly, mainstream self-care narratives and techniques are usually premised on generalized individualistic standpoints that do not really address the needs nor the more collective experiences of more marginalized communities. A new paradigm of care and belonging has to be developed. I mentioned that there were three basic themes that I wanted to emphasize: students, faculty, and staff, the last one being institutional viability. Along those lines, at UNR, we have begun the work to create the first diversity and inclusion strategic plan, working with all principal areas, academic, student services, HR, administrations, and finance, so that diversity and inclusion becomes an accountable, operationable, measurable goal. Also, and we would like to propose this possibility to all ENCHI institutions, as related to the pandemic context, because we need to depart always from some level of assessment, we're also carrying out an institution-wide survey of needs with community members, students, faculty, staff, in non-immediately health-related areas of need, beyond technological and physical considerations, which have already been very well assessed. This summer, we're beginning to survey administrators and staff to allow for the return of faculty and students in full in the fall. Finally, with respect to institutional viability, there's a crucial role of leadership. We have benefited enormously from the incredible leadership of the Chancellor and that of UNLV and UNR presidents, and I will definitely miss my dear boss, President Johnson. But as my esteemed colleague from TMCC, Yvonne Allen, pointed out, now it is even more imperative, if that was even possible, to count with a new leadership who, in terms of substantial and extensive credentials on both a professional and a personal basis, demonstrates the capacity to advance necessary structural and cultural transformations that our institutions require on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Thank you so much. And now we'll hear from my colleague, Dr. Barbie Oakes.
So good morning, committee, Chair Perkins, Chancellor Riley, and my fellow EDIC members. For the record, I am Barbie Oakes, the Chief Diversity Officer at UNLV. And it's really a pleasure to be a part of this conversation this morning, because in this upcoming year, I will be the co-chair to my wonderful colleague, Eloisa. And we have great plans ahead, you know, for this upcoming year. So as Eloisa shared her comments addressing the critical need to promote equity and inclusion in the midst of these unprecedented challenges that we're facing at all of our ENSHE institutions, we originally to center this conversation on the disproportionate impact of COVID-19, as if that wasn't enough of a challenge. But now we're also facing the need to address systemic racism and other inequities in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. So I just wanted to point out that it's almost like the perfect storm of showing the complexity of doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work, both in our institutions and across our systems, because before we can even get to a conversation about one issue, something else is on the horizon. And for those of you who are tuned in, we know that the Supreme Court is supposed to make a decision about DACA at any time. So we know that another storm is really coming. So again, you know, it just, I think it points to the importance of doing this kind of work. So here we are facing even tighter budget restrictions. Then the challenge is for us then to figure out ways to be even more nimble and collaborative in the way that we navigate this rapidly changing landscape of higher education. As Eloisa said, a new paradigm of care and belonging has to be developed. So what I want to pose to you is just a couple of areas, three areas that I feel that we can really hone in on to strengthen and demonstrate how we want to implement this new paradigm to foster and promote equity across ENSHE. We're going to talk about, just briefly, communication, assessment, and collaboration. So just, and again, we're trying to do in 15 minutes here what we could literally spend a day on. So the conversation this morning is just to plant some seeds, and then we want you all to think as a system how we can come back to this conversation and truly dedicate more time to this across the board. So just a couple of points around communication. It's going to be absolutely vital that we harness the power of social media. We're going to have to demonstrate accountability regarding, like, the hate post by members of our faculty and staff. I have had a number of calls and emails and conversations this week with people uncertain, like, how to handle these situations that come up when hate is expressed, either faculty to faculty. So just, I think, like, it's worth having some consistent measures across the whole system, how we're going to address that. I know that UNLV has spent a lot of work completely revamping our social media policy. So let's look at what we're doing at each of our schools and see how we can share that out. We also need to ensure that our communications include transparency on our institutional policies. So for example, as our different schools are working on policing strategies to ensure that we're operating on based on a community-based model, then we're going to have to also guarantee that everyone can easily assess those policies. Because in an equity model, people should know what we're doing and how we plan to do it. So again, just thinking about what is reflected on our websites and who has access to it will be absolutely critical. In terms of assessment, we absolutely have to leverage the collective thought leadership within our campuses to ensure that we're basing our policies and our practices on the actual needs of people and not the perceived needs of people from diverse groups. So in short, I think that we're going to have to rethink who has a seat at the table when we're making these decisions that impact the well-being and the viability of our institutions. This is one of the reasons that Eloisa proposed that we conduct an industry-wide survey to assess the needs of our community members based on the disproportionate impact of COVID-19. Because at this point, we honestly don't know what other socioeconomic concerns have intensified since the onset of the pandemic that we should be addressing. So assessment is going to be critical. As Eloisa shared, UNR and UNLV have surveyed our academic faculty and some of our administrative faculty to determine those who need to teach remotely. Now we need to collect and disaggregate those data for administrative faculty, classified staff, students, both undergraduate and graduate, in order to confirm the disproportionate impact of the virus on our campuses. I believe this data will be vital in determining resource allocation across the system in the coming year. So again, having some consistency, if our resources, if you know our budgets are funded across the state, then we need to know consistently what's happening across the state. I wanted to give, and then the last area is collaboration. And I want to point out collaboration within our institutions and across the systems, because we're going to have to be laser focused and issue specific in developing the team so that we can quickly and appropriately address issues. I want to give you three brief examples of how I feel UNLV has demonstrated that laser focus just over the spring semester. So President Miana formed an incident management team that develops and implements our campus-wide strategy to ensure a safe return to work. As a part of that team, there are a number of subcommittees that really hone in on the issues, both working internally and with the external community to situate us in preparing, you know, ensuring that people will be safe when they return to campus. Provost Heavey developed an MSI task force, because now with our federal designations across many of our institutions as minority-serving, Hispanic-serving institutions, and ANAPC institutions, we need to be more collaborative and enhance communication in terms of the work that we're doing. I believe that in these times, especially since May 25th, it is essential that all of our schools have strategies in place to support the people who are affected the most by systemic inequities. So this week, President Miana formed a command and control task force that's an outgrowth of the incident management team, and she charged us with establishing programs and policies to support the Black community and address issues of systemic racism that happen on campus. You know, these are issues that every school in the nation are grappling with. So let's just be honest and candid, pull people together who have expertise in the areas. President Miana has also discussed forming a similar team when we have, in particular, the DACA decision. So, like, you know, instead of trying to make sure that every issue is addressed in every committee, let's reframe the way that we structure it so that we can be inclusive and differentiated in tackling these very complicated issues. And then, of course, across NCHI, we are going to have to be more, and even with our regents, be more intentional in building the cultural intelligence of our decision makers so that people will have the skill to navigate during these complex times. Right now, I'm collaborating with Human Resources, the Faculty Center, Faculty Affairs, Undergraduate Education, and the Deans to offer a series of different workshops for academic advisors, for faculty and administrators to help them mitigate bias and better support people who are disproportionately impacted by the issues we've discussed. You have to know that there's a certain level of absolute fear among some colleagues because they're terrified of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. And we have to move past this point of paralysis so that people can really get in there and do the work, and so that we can begin to change the paradigm. So those are just a few examples of ways that we're tackling this this issue to be more collaborative within our institution. But I also, as our chair, Edith, our incoming chair, Eloisa, our past chair, Yvonne, have said, one of the greatest strengths in the state of Nevada is the collaborative relationship that we share among our EDIC colleagues. And so just again, to reinforce the importance of strengthening these collaborations even further, and also increasing the interaction between EDIC and the CDC with the whole board, because if you all are making decisions, I believe you need to know more about the work that we're doing. So, for example, our EDIC All Access Task Force is currently working with the governor's office to secure funds to support our undocumented community, because undocumented students could not receive any of the finances from the CARES Act. So they're really working on right now and building up a model to distribute some funds that they've raised from private donors to help our undocumented students. This is a huge equity issue to ensure that students who have worked so hard to get to our institutions can stay here. Most of our NCHE institutions have achieved HSI status. This places us in a really unique position to compete for federal grants to promote student success. So our EDIC HSI task force is working around the clock practically. I mean, not a week goes by that we don't get an email from Clarissa, who is our chair, to talk about some new initiative and some grants. And, you know, my colleague, Edith, in Nevada State, they've received a multi-million-dollar grant. But now there's a lot of money being left on the table because we need to have some collaborations across our institutions. Help us build the infrastructure to write those grants so that we can get that money. Our NCHE Foster Youth Initiative is really gaining recognition, and now we're able to compete for additional funds for our campuses. And so this year, Eloisa and I plan to work with the corporate community to enhance our workforce development programs for our students. I mean, you can see I could go on and on, but I think I have like less than a minute in time, and I'm hoping that we can have time for a few questions. But I just felt like Eloisa and I both, and all of Edith, felt it was just critical for you all to know more about what we're doing, what our vision is, because if we continue to strengthen these system-wide relationships, the sky is literally the limit on what we can achieve. And so we're working hard, but we do need the full support of the board. This year, as I shared a minute ago, Chair Eloisa and I, as her co-chair, will be asking for more conversation with you all, because all of these issues are ones that fundamentally damage the pipeline if they're unaddressed. So all of this great work that we've done to increase student success, to close the achievement gap, to increase access, we don't want to see us take five steps backwards because you're not leveraging the power and the intellect and the thought leadership that my colleagues and I bring to the table. And on that note, I will stop. Do we have time for a few questions or comments?
Yes, actually we do. Are there any questions or thank you so much, Dr. Oakes. I appreciated the insight. And thank you so much, Dr. Gordon Mora. I thank you. A lot of good information. I think my head is spinning. So any questions?
Well, let me just say that I'm also happy to share these notes out to the committee, so that if you want to have, all of these different initiatives that we shared, that I'm totally happy to share that information out if that's appropriate.
Thank you so much. I think that'd be great to be able to have a written copy.
Yeah, both presentations. We will send that most certainly.
Are there any other questions from the any board members?
This is Lisa. Dr. Oakes, you mentioned there's two things that I wanted to ask you just to elaborate on. The funding part, the money being left on the table. Can you just kind of elaborate how we can help serve that better? Because I know this is something that Nevada just historically, which I think Governor Sisolak's doing a really good job working with the delegation to try to make us more competitive with a lot of states in our region on federal funding. But this has always been an issue for our state. How can we help you with that?
Well, there are a number of ways that we can help. But the first one that comes to mind is that as Eloisa and Eloisa, Edith, and Clarissa would be quick to tell you, there are a number of grants that are there, particularly for HSI institutions, that you can only get those funds if you collaborate with another university. And so part of the challenge is that our diversity officers don't have enough resources to be able to you know, provide the infrastructure that we need. So we're going to have to rethink how we provide support in this particular area. Do we need a grant writer at the NSHE level, or do we need to designate people within our offices of institutional research that can go out there and help us in writing those particular proposals? Because there really is a great deal of money. And another untapped area is with a lot of private foundations. They're funding first generation initiatives. There is not an institution in NSHE that doesn't have a significant first generation student population. So let's go to some of these private foundations. But all of us are so busy doing the almost like reacting to issues that it's hard for us to be able to get out and do some of this proactive work. And the scope of it is so broad. I've only mentioned foster students. We have, you know, like, let's not even talk about homelessness and food insecurity that our students are dealing with and all of these other kinds of areas. So there just aren't enough hours in the day for us, given our current staffing model. So, you know, rethink again when I'm talking about like being nimble, collaborating with resources. Can we reassign someone that can help us with writing these proposals? Do we need to have someone sitting at the NSHE level? That's just one example.
Thank you.
May I add a comment as well? Yeah. Chair Perkins? This is Avit.
Oh, sure.
Just last month, the HSI task force members met with the federal delegation. For example, Cortez Mesto's office, Congresswoman Lee, Horsford, etc. And we made a direct ask for help in developing the grantmanship of our own institutions by using their offices to help us tap into experts in DC, those that could help us build the skills that we need to compete for those grants. So we'd appreciate all of your help as well as just continuing that conversation and making sure that, you know, everyone said they were very willing, but let's make sure it happens. So we'd appreciate your support in that.
And if can I add, Madam Chair, if sure, I can add. Yes, hi. Kind of following what both Dr. Oakes and Dr. Fernandez mentioned, I think an important theme that all chief diversity officers experience is a sense of isolation in our work. And we need to, it's not simply a matter of adding more staff, which is always needed, but it's a matter of structuring, or rather restructuring the work to elevate the purposes of diversity and inclusion more broadly and more embedded throughout the work. Part of the goals of the strategic plan we're carrying out at UNR is precisely that, to through reworking working arrangements, that diversity and inclusion is not understood as this office over here, but as a coordinating unit, the way you would think of a general counsel as a coordinating unit for legal matters that all units interact with regularly, and more proactively. Many times we experience, as we're experiencing now, that our work tends to respond to crisis rather than plan. So most certainly, I think EDIC has been an incredible model of collaboration. We are all chief diversity officers from NG institutions, and we are always aiming for the Nevada level of work rather than an individual institutional concerns only. So that's the type of modeling that we need to strengthen and promote. We know that part of our culture is individual competition. So in a way, we for diversity and inclusion, we have to change the frame of mind.
Dr. Oakes, if I could just add a follow-up question. First, just I agree completely. And one of the things that I worry about is right now when the efforts that you're working on are needed most, you complement that with the economic crisis that we're facing. And this is one of the areas, unfortunately, we've seen this time and time again, don't always get protected as much as they should be. And so I do think it's really important that we understand collaboratively what y'all are working on, the importance of it statewide, since we do have a very vulnerable student population in the state, whether you're at UNR, Western Nevada, or UNLV. But because of that, I thought one of the things Dr. Oak said was very timely, was doing that assessment statewide to show the needs that students are facing. One, I think that'll help with dollars. It'll help make the argument stronger. And I always think things should be data driven. One of my questions that I wanted to ask you is, one, because it is so timely and students are not in school right now, how could we facilitate that? Do you think we wait until fall? Do you think we wait until summer? Do you think we try to reach out to students now while they're a bit displaced and trying to, you know, go through their anxiety and determine what they're going to do for the fall semester? Yeah, please. And I'd like to hear from all of you. Yeah.
Actually, what we mentioned is that at UNR, we have initiated, we're drafting a survey to be carried out throughout the institution, and now we are starting with administrative and staff sectors, since we know that most of them are here. But the idea is that we start collecting the data, tabulating the data, analyzing the data to incorporate students and faculty in the fall. And the proposal is that we do this similar model NG-wide, given that more or less we will be facing similar issues. So therefore, to bring it to a statewide level, what we mention is that we have many sources of statistical information, many times on a national basis, but we need to better understand the context of Nevada. And that's why we began this process at UNR, actually after the pandemic. We have carried out at UNR the same way it was done at UNLV and our other institutions, surveys on technological needs, on physical needs, on what is required to work from home. So the proposal is, beyond that, what are non-physical, non-material, non-technological needs that we need to better understand by collecting data and information in order to prepare our institution for the return of students, faculty, and staff, and also to address the last issue I mentioned, viability.
Yes, I agree completely. And, you know, when Eloisa started talking to me about the assessment that she's doing, Regent Perkins?
I'm going to have to cut the question and answer period short because our next meeting is at 9, and I still want to have Regent Levine enter all those great ideas into public comment. I mean, not public comment, new business, so that we can take a look at this the next meeting. Sorry, everybody. I mean, I would love to continue this conversation because it has been so enlightening, and I really appreciate, Barbie, you said about the perfect storm. I think that's exactly what we're in, is the perfect storm. And we can't let that energy and momentum be lost. So with that, thank you all. And we're moving on to the next item. And my machine cut off. So I assume it's new business?
Okay. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Any new business, please? Regent Levine.
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to monopolize this. I'm sorry. Okay, for new business, and I'm not quite sure how I'm supposed to communicate this. Chair Perkins, can we get an update on the on what's happening at the Supreme Court level on DACA from one of the attorneys of Nietzsche?
Absolutely.
Z, am I saying that right? Who should that be?
I'll have to look into. Go ahead, Zelim.
So I'm happy to provide an update. It's just we're all kind of in a holding pattern, waiting for the Supreme Court of the United States to issue a decision on that case. So we think it should be sometime this month.
Thank you. Yeah, if I can request that we get an update on that, that would be great. And then I also, just as a follow up to the conversation we were just having on the grants, if there's kind of, I know walking through the Vegas Systems Office, we have a phenomenal amount of people who are focused on NSF or NASA grants. Maybe if there's one person who could just kind of do a reminder of the grant writing folks we have in-house, because maybe we could kind of collaborate to not necessarily reassign, but to just determine if someone could take on more of the HSI or some of these cultural grants that we're leaving on the table.
Is there any other new business? Thank you, Chair Perkins. I'd like to take a look at changing our name to match what it is nationally, as opposed to CDC being EDIC, so that you know we better describes what this committee is supposed to be about and better fits with the modern language. And also, cultural competencies and emotional intelligence as an onboarding process, perhaps starting with the board. With the Board of Regents, I'd like to look into that also.
Regent Perkins, okay. I think Amy or Regent Carvalho had a comment as well.
I'm sorry, Regent Carvalho, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. And actually, you mentioned the suggestion I had also for new business for maybe an analysis and needs assessment for training for not only the board, but our faculty and staff at each of the institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more new business? And that brings us to item number 9, public comment. Where's Regent McAdoo? Was there any comment from Regent McAdoo?
Okay. President Solis has a comment.
Go ahead, President Solis.
Regent Perkins, good morning, good members of the committee. I just had a few comments. You know, the events of the last couple of weeks have hit home for me in more ways than one. Mr. Floyd and I were in college together, and while I didn't know him specifically, you know, we were at a small campus, and I remember him, you know, he represents to me that this could happen to any one of my friends, you know, coming from a minority community. So I just wanted to share a few things that I think are really important as the work of the Diversity Committee continues. One, I think it's really important to address the cultural competence piece. I think it's more than just awareness of the issues that are going on. I think it's important for all of us to understand what has got us here. I think that's a really important part of battling this. I think the second piece that was brought up by Dr. Oakes is extremely important in terms of the digital divide. If anything that COVID has shown us is that it's not a level playing field in many regards, but if we keep our students on an uneven playing field when it comes to technology and access to the internet and things that drive the economy, we're going to leave them out of the job. So I think that that's really important. I think the other piece, Regent Perkins, that's going to be critical is the conversation of resources for the students that come in to our institutions, the issue of accountability for all presidents. I've been at NNC for 2 years, and I'm proud of the work that my colleagues do. But again, presidents change, and I think that it's important for the board to hold all the presidents accountable for the work that we do with our students of color. And that leads me to the piece of student success. I know that we have one of those emphasis on the goals of student success, but I think that we also have a responsibility to report out constantly on where we're at with our students of color and their success rates, because they're like unicorns. we only see the ones that we work with on the campus, but we have to keep in mind that they're only a fraction of the entire community that's out there. And I think for Southern Nevada especially, Southern Nevada is right now demographically what the rest of the country will be over the next couple of decades. And I think that we're in a unique position to provide leadership to the rest of the country in terms of how not only we deal with these very critical issues, but how we ensure the success of the students that come to our door. So resources, accountability, and that ever, you know, important focus on student success, I think moving forward will have to be some key tenets of the work of the diversity committee, and count us in for whatever is needed.
Regent Perkins, may I make a comment?
Is that Regent McAdoo?
No, this is Karen Hilgerson.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, I need a bigger screen.
Yeah, I know. So first of all, I just want to echo the words of my colleague, Dr. Solis, but I also want to add a couple of reactions. This was an excellent meeting. I am so delighted with the action that I feel and I hear, and it's percolating, and I'm so excited. One of the things that I think is going to be really great is having a systemic model that we all employ, having systemic assessments that we all employ, having collaborative structures that we all employ as a system. I think this is the one of the most important tasks that we can get done as soon as we possibly can, because, you know, starting the work now, we've got years of it ahead. This racism and injustice is deep. It is a mix of microaggressions, and now we've seen this huge storm in a horrible death of George Floyd and the way that happened. It's like the termites have been eating the foundation for 200, 300 years, and now the storm is bringing the house down. And I think this is one of the greatest challenges for ENSHE, but I am so confident that our remarkable faculty, staff, and our students, and the presidents, and the Board of Regents, I know we can do it. And I loved how you started today. I believe it was Eloise talking about having the courage to have authentic, courageous conversations and calling it out, because if we can't even do that comfortably, we're in deep trouble as higher education professionals. So thank you so much. This was a great meeting, and we've got a lot of good work that I know lies ahead of us. I appreciate all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I guess we're now in public comment.
I would like to see something. Can she see me? How do I? It's on. Regent Perkins?
There, okay, there you are. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Regent Carol Del Carlo, and I was on this committee before when I was a new regent, and I learned so much, and I just really want to echo what you just said. I've been taking really great notes, too, and as I can commit to you as the incoming vice chair that we do need training, and when new regents come on, and all the things that were said today, and we can lead the charge, and we should lead the charge, and having one system, if we end up somehow finding a grant writer that can be shared by 8 institutions for, or 7 at least, for these institutions, yeah, we can do a lot of things and be real leaders here. And the other thing I mentioned yesterday, that I just got a 4-year appointment to the second 4-year appointment to the Nevada Advisory Committee to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and we will be meeting probably within the next month, or at least by September, and we'll be looking for a new topic to spend the next 2 years deep diving and writing and having public hearings and then writing our report. So I just like to throw out to our committee here and you as the chair that if there's an issue that would help us in Nevada, let's think of it, because I can take that proposal then to the committee. And I'm pretty persuasive maybe we'll get our topic. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Public, so I'm going to close new business and public comment. Was there any? Go ahead.
Yes, Chair Perkins. It's my understanding that we received an audio recording from Dr. Honor Bell from CSN for public comment while this meeting was ongoing, and I believe We have an audio tech from NSHE that is able to play it into the record right now.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Arnold Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm sharing my comments for the Cultural Diversity Committee that's scheduled to meet June 12th at 8 a.m. Good morning. My name is Dr. Arnold Bell, and I'm the current Faculty Senate President at the College of Southern Nevada. I am writing to share my timely concerns about my culture-related issues within the NSHE system. The premise of this concern is that our system and institution advocates diversity, equity, and inclusion. But when examining the results, I am deeply concerned about the timely progress of NSHE minority professionals. Historically, NSHE institutions have inadequately addressed the various issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. In particular, the lack of diversity when it pertains to faculty and administrators, numerous institutions do not have diverse representatives equivalent to our student body population. Each institution needs to do a better job at identifying, developing, and promoting minority professionals at their respective institutions. With a multitude of minority professionals like myself, there's a serious disconnect with issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion within our system. To further examine this issue, I would like to respectfully request each respective institution conduct a survey of their minority professionals to better comprehend its targeted audience specific concerns about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Second, I would like to request each institution conduct a forensic audit of the complaints filed regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion. After this data is collected, we can collectively examine a specific issue plaguing our institution's efforts. Finally, I would like to respectfully request that all NSHE system employees be required to take cultural competency and emotional intelligence training to better serve our designated minority and Hispanic institutions, as well as improving the intercultural relationship amongst NSHE employees. If I can be of any service to effectively promote these culture-related issues or initiatives for our system as well as respected institutions, I am there. Respectfully submitted, Dr. Arnold S. Bell. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And with no more public comment, with that being the only public comment, I think we are adjourned.